Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, the Catholic Church, social justice, our programs, or the mercy world. Today, my guest is Bill Thackeray. Bill, a very warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Kia ora, welcome. Okay, thank you, Beate.
Bill Thackeray is the CE for Te Waipuna Puawai, one of the Whānau Mercy members of our big family. And you've been working there since May 2017.
Correct, yep.
Bill is both of Maori and Samoan heritage and has spent most of his life in West and South Auckland. He's been the CE of a number of health, social service and education services for more than 25 years and has come to Te Waipuna with a strong community and cultural background in leadership. Bill, now it's 2.5 years,
gosh,
2 years and a few months that you've been the CEO at Te Waipuna Puawai. How do you enjoy your role?
Still exciting. I guess if I was to summarise it, the first year was kind of a year where you settled in and, you know, got an idea of the wider Mercy Network in Te Waipuna Puawai in particular. And then the second year has been really a year of review. And that's what every organisation needs to do. It needs to review itself. But particularly, we had a look at all the current programs we were running and asking ourselves, does it still meet a need in the community? And that review has just been completed. It started in May 2018 through what we call a wayfinding exercise. And that was the board and I looking at everything we did and asking the hard questions that we need to do, part of what Mercy does. And some of the fundamental things around that is, are we still providing a service that community wants? But if there are other services they're offering, you know, in terms of duplication, why are we still doing them? So there were some hard questions around things we've run since the very beginning, like the bread run. It's been an important part of the Mercy work that we do. And part of it in the community has been changes in that there's about 3 or 4 other organisations that do that. So we had to look at it and go, well, why are we still doing it? And are we better off moving out of that and letting other people do that because, you know, they've got a wider resource? And one of the reflections of that was there was a lot of bread that was being left, you know, not used. And so that was one of the things as part of the review. So the second year, getting back to the 2.5 years, has been about review. And we've actually scaled down to be able to scale up again. And so I think it's part of a plan. But the need first was to look at everything. And so That took me out of my comfort zone in terms of the second year being around more internally focused, because my particular skill set is in the community and working with the community to do that. And so that was kind of put on hold just for a little while until we did that review. But we're now at the stage where we are actually going out to the community again, but with a clear plan of action and a clear idea around what it is that we want to reconfigure to, which means that a lot of the programs have ceased. But we have some views around what's going to go in their place. So the fundamental thing is if we're going to stop something, then we're actually going to have something in its place. So it's not about slashing and burning. It's more about, okay, if it's not meeting a need, what is the need today? Make ourselves relevant. You know, keep true with, you know, the sayings of Catherine McCauley and those important things, but ask those hard questions. And so we've just come out of a community meeting with Te Aki Manatū board and we had to talk to them about what we're doing, but why were the reasons behind their changes. And some of the things there were about, did you consult with community? How much did you engage with them around what you're doing? You're not in isolation here. You're part of a wider community that supported you for 20 years.
So then you have to have the reasons for being relevant in the society.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's something every organisation needs to do.
Yeah.
What we were fantastic at 20 years ago, some of that may still apply, but some of it's changed, particularly in our community, being Tamaki or Glen in Point England, Pāmua. With the amount of housing changes that happened in that particular community, it's basically changed the face of the community, meaning that there's still a high Māori and Pacific Island population that resides there, but a lot of them got moved out as part of Housing New Zealand and their moves to rebuild the whole area. So if you did a tour around the community, you'll see that's one of the most impacted currently and walking around what's happening, and therefore, as a result, people being moved out, people coming in, million-dollar houses. There's a whole lot of changes there that are happening that we have to configure ourselves to say, well, are what we're doing still relevant?
I remember last year when I did an interview with you and Jessica, your assistant, she was telling us about the changes in the community in the last years, and she was very young still.
Correct.
So that's amazing. Well, for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiore Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Bill Takare. He is the director, the CE of Te Waipuna Puawai. And Bill, congratulations to 20 years of Te Waipuna Puawai.
Thank you.
So only recently you had a big celebration on the 20 years.
Yeah.
Tell us more about it and maybe give us some background. There were interesting speakers and the speakers went right back to the 20 years.
Absolutely.
How it all started.
Yeah. And so accumulated in having a 20th celebration birthday. That was on the 27th of September, Friday last week. And that was special in itself, but I guess it's the background leading to that, because if you talk about a history of 20 years, obviously there's a journey there that's important to go alongside what actually accumulates with a birthday and celebrating that fact. And again, the history, as I understand it, and like I said, 2.5 years, but enough to realise even more so being this, our 20th year anniversary. So what we decided to do was not celebrate necessarily a date where we started, or celebrate during the course of the year. So 2019 means a number of things. So we've actually got four events that we did for this year. The first one was on the 2nd of February this year, and that was the first event, and that was held at Waddell. And Waddell in Glen Innes is basically where the whole history or the footprint of the Sisters of Mercy started. So in 1989 is when they were operating there, and delivering services all from Waddell. That opened on the 6th of February 1990, but that was our initial inroads into the whole community. The important thing around that whole history is they were invited into the community. That's an important part of how Mercy operates. It didn't impose themselves. They went and asked. The community said, yes, we would like you to assist us. And a part of that, the sisters there started embarking on a number of things, not just the formation of Waddell, and that was the first event that we had on the 2nd of February this year, because that was the first part of saying, let's celebrate the service delivery side. And that was important too, because that was when the sisters started to door knock, basically, and go to every home in GI and Point England and say, hey, this is who we are, do you need any help, any assistance, and that grew, and that was about a stance alongside women and children at risk in particular.
How many sisters were they door knocking?
There are a number, but I will mention a few. It was Mary Foy, Agnes Brown, Barbara Takati, who's not a sister but was an important part. Muria Pumari, Sister Marie Brown, obviously still there today after the 20 years. And then they had a number of other sisters at the back there, running the, I guess you call governance, but having that oversight of those things that were happening. And so those were people like Katrina Fabbage and others, who was the inaugural chair of Te Waipuna Puawai when it got formed. But that initial getting into the community, making a stance and saying, can we, as part of your invitation, extend this to the home at Waddell, and then further on going through to the building of Te Waipuna Puawai and Annesley and Umeni Crescent, was an important part of that journey, but also the undertakings they did with community alongside of how they wanted to grow alongside them. So Waddell was initially set up around emergency accommodation, support services, that type of basic stuff. Those that have been at Waddell, there's a house in front where the sisters reside, and at the back there's a home that was particularly set up for that purpose. And so those are the humble beginnings, and their first event celebrated largely our footsteps into the community. And it was held at Waddell, and we had a great celebration there. It was largely just ourselves, mm-hmm. say, hey, we're here, yeah. we're 20 years plus. And then the second event we had was basically the date that we were signed with Te Waipuna Pouai became a legal entity. And so that was an important date as well, and that happened this year as well.
That was 20 years ago that Te Waipuna became a legal entity?
That's correct, in February. Yeah. And so it was back in February that they organised themselves around organising a legal entity and all the paperwork that comes with that, but also the importance of setting up the organisation. So that's when Te Waipuna Pouai Mercy Oasis Limited, that's the full name. And I think even in the name, and I know I mentioned this last time I was here, it was important too because the whole thing around Oasis or Waipuna was important around the restoration. It had around three strands. One, Papatūānuku, obviously, is part of it. The Treaty of Waitangi, but also the Mercy Valley. So,
can you just recall the origin of the name Te Waipuna Pouai?
Yeah. And so, in Māori, literally speaking, it means Te Waipuna Pouai means the bubbling spring. And so, puna is a spring, wai is the water, and pouai is to grow or to bubble or to be something that's alive. And we all know the connotations of water. It's about life, it's healing, and all those things that are important to it. But it also took into account the mercy values around an oasis as well and how important that is in terms of the water that brings. And so we brought together both a concept from the mercy and then coming into Aotearoa, but also aligning that with the tikanga that comes with Māori culture as well. And so those two things blended together. And it represented also the partnerships that were happening at the moment there between Māori and mercy, and the community leadership that was part of the whole development and growth going forward. So it's a beautiful day, but it comes from those particular concepts that are bicultural, but also things that are very important to us around how we actually view what we're looking to do and the values that shape that as well.
So you mentioned Oasis, and we also, the Mercy Spirituality Centre is also an oasis in the middle
Correct.
Of Auckland.
Yep.
But we're a spiritual oasis,
yep.
and where people feel the refreshment through the gardens and the quietness.
Absolutely.
And
nature.
You give a different refreshment for people who are struggling in their lives
yep.
in a different way.
Yeah.
Because the people who come to our centre, they are often very stressed in their lives, very busy. And they come and find peace.
Yep.
And as I understand, the people who come to Te Waipuna Pouai, they have a lot of other challenges in their lives.
Absolutely.
So how did when it started? Did it start as an oasis, or did it start as an education place?
The oasis was the overriding thing of what it achieves. So you always have a long-term goal vision that drives it. But we started simply with programs like adult education programs, and I think that's been the hallmark of Te Waipuna Pouai, certainly, and its physical setup at Ellerslie, but also continuation at Waddell.
What kind of adult education was it?
So it was programs that, and I'll give a number of them in a minute, but, that were step-through programs, if you want to put it that way. It's that, you know, sometimes when the sisters or the staff engage with people, you know, engaging with some of those women, you know, they've, I wouldn't say fearful, but, you know, reluctant, I guess, around, okay, and so you had to do a lot of convincing. But the convincing had to be about something that was basic, around the basic needs. So some of the programs we still run is sewing, cooking, gardening, those sort of basic practical things. But it's also the relationships we developed early on with organisations like UNITEC, I guess, because UNITEC, we're here at the moment. And those were programs that they stepped through to. So it was tied to a recognised institution that could actually take them further if they chose to. So all those programs were geared towards largely women and children. The whole setup of Te Waipuna Pouai was designed, and I guess that's a story in itself around the planning that went into the actual design of the facility there, based within the wetlands, but also within, as you mentioned, those people that are stressed in that, quite often the mediator for them is nature. Mm-hmm. And so what that provides to them is peace, But what that provides them is a space to reflect and a place to think through what it is, but be within an environment that does that. And that still remains one of the things that's key about Te Waipunupu, and I imagine the spiritual centre as well, is that, you know, with the stresses that are within the towns, like Glen Innes, Point England, Pamua, they often need to come to a place that's not in the town. And that's quite often why it was designed, that it'll take them out of the stress of what's happening there, bring them and their children to a place where they do practical support and programs with adult education focus, but with a view to getting them back into education.
Do you have a garden behind Te Waipuna?
You know that. And so part of that right next to the Waipuna Pōwai is if you come to the centre at Aumini, as you come in, there's Mercy Parklands, which is obviously the hospital and the hospice that provides. But as you go down to the drive, and I think that's often what they talk about, people that first come to the organisation, they didn't know that there was something that existed like Te Waipunupu. So you do go down the drive, and you go to the right, you eventually get to the facility itself, but next to it, as you've mentioned, is a community garden, and and where sisters live. So the residents are there, as well as a home that's focused around community and gardening and all those things that nature brings to you. In the middle of that garden, there's a respite centre, if you want to put it that way, where people can just sit and reflect. And that's right next to where we are at Te Waipunupu, where some of the bigger programs happen in a more coordinated way. Mm-hmm. And so the facility itself was designed around those types of things for women and children specifically, families and community as an extension to that, but with the environment, it's important to the healing and the parts that nature play.
So how do women and children, or how do women know about it? By word of mouth, or in the beginning with a door knocking, as you said?
Yeah, initially with the door knocking, but we've had to be a lot more different. And I guess when I talked about earlier about reviewing our programs, that's exactly one of the issues that came up. Door knocking is not that effective these times, so we had to change the strategy. And the strategy now is Facebook. The strategy now is social media, for one, and word of mouth. It's always going to be word of mouth. What we've learned, obviously, is if a woman or a person that goes, of course, has a good experience, they're more likely to talk to people, their own family or friends, saying, look, I had a good experience, you should come with me. So one of it is, you know, bring a friend. But the other one is making sure that the experience they have are things that spread and talk through, because that's quite often how we've picked up people, is because, oh no, I heard somebody went to say it and now I want to have a go. The social media one is what we've done with programs in the last year or two, and that has changed things, because people are not necessarily answering their doors anymore. You know, there's fear and there's a whole lot of things that come now with being, you know, but what we do know is they have access to phones and computers, and so that's allowing us to get more into the younger age group, I guess, around young mums and that are able to do that.
But they come physically to come to your courses, or is that also the course also online?
Well, it's not online yet. That's probably another area that we need to look at. Currently, it's all physically still picking them up in the community with a van, so we still have the transport. And that whole picking them up and dropping them off.
You pick them up from wherever they are?
Yep, in the community. So, you know, if they arrange to be on the course, we say, do you need transport? Some make it there, but the whole purpose of the van is not just to pick them up and transport there. That's been our best source of evaluation we've ever had, because when you bring them to a course and the van drivers, you know, when they take them back, they're talking. Had a good experience today. I really enjoyed today, or today just wasn't what I wanted. And so you get a lot of feedback as you're driving back to the community. So it's about 4 to 5 k's from the town centre to Waipunupu. But that provides a good space, not just to the physical aspects, but also assessing the effectiveness of what you're doing as well.
I think it's also a way to exchange thoughts in a very non-challenging way. So that's something that would be missing if you did the courses online.
Yep. And they interact, and that's the beauty of having them together. Yeah. I mean, individually as well, but you can get individual assessments, but collectively it's good to know what the feel is, because quite often it is that feel that determines whether you continue to run something or whether you need to change it, or whether you need to basically say, well, like we did with the review, that isn't working, let's try something different altogether.
So can you give us a range of programs that you're running at the moment?
Okay, well, the range of programs we're doing at the moment, sewing is one. Sister Rosemary, she's in Ireland at the moment, but she's been, and all of us, this is a very accessible, I need to say that, around the multi-skills they do have and their willingness to assist to Waipunapua. We were going to do a gardening program this term, term four, and that's an important thing we've run in the past, but that's just weather-related. Yeah. And so we will definitely be doing that as part of a Sister Bridget who does that within, it's got a horticultural background to that as well, that will run that. But in the last year we've run cooking courses with a focus on Pacific Island women. There was a particular course under our GFIT or Growing Financial Independence and Tamaki program that we brought them all together there and did that. But the main courses that have been stalled to Waipunapua is the Te Reo course run by a guy, Tamati Patawai, who's very renowned within the local community but also has the confidence, I guess, to be able to teach the Te Reo and Chikana. That's an important part. Then we have Whaerangi Davis, and she's well known to.
She comes to the centre also sometimes, once a year.
Yeah, so she's been awesome in relation to what she does. She's been running a Māori spirituality course, which is important too, in getting in touch with what it is for you, as particularly Māori woman around spirituality. And then she runs a Mana Atu and Mana Tupuna program, which is really making sure that they're in touch with who they are with, you know, I guess, the gods with an S around how that supports them and what they do. And term four, she's running a karanga wananga. So they're having a specific focus on the calling aspects of being a woman around what happens on the marae and all those aspects. And then we're getting back into programs where we actually utilise our van, and she's looking to actually take some of the women that are on courses up north. Not just a trip to her homeland, but also expose them to the wider things that are in the rural community, that, as against what you see here in the towns and whatnot.
So the women are all Māori?
No, they're from all different cultures. Has a focus on Māori, but certainly not exclusive. And we've had sisters on there themselves, and we've had people from different cultures, a lot of Pacific Island people, and Asian. And so it's starting to change as well in terms of the audience. And like I said, with a change in the community, we need to relook and say, well, does that still fitting what the need is? But also, does that still cater for the different cultural ethnicities that we have within the...
So what are the preconditions when you come? Do you have to be poor, or do you have to be in need? Or how do you assess who can come to the courses?
Well, the assessment is a real basic assessment. They have to reside largely within the community. That's an important part. But they want to attend. I think the major thing for them is that there's a commitment to attending, and that it's not based necessarily on their wage or their income. It's based on their commitment, but also their wanting to learn, and that we play a part in, like I said earlier, as a stepping course towards whatever education they want to do at the moment. And we had a lot of new ethnic minorities come to our Te Reo course this in term three, just wanting to learn basic Te Reo, but also knowing that's an insight for them to go forward with not just their learning of Aotearoa and whatnot, but also being familiar with what happens in a cultural context within the community as well.
So when people come, do they pay a koha then?
They can pay a koha, but it's not asked of them. Mm-hmm. I guess that's something we tried hard to maintain. I mean, cost is, you know, you look at it two ways. You know, cost gives a commitment from them sometimes. But cost to us should not be a cost to them, because it's something that, you know, we do as part of our core business, I guess, to support women and children mainly, but families and community is a part of that. So it's free, mm-hmm. but people do. They still do koha when they want to. And that's pretty much consistent through all our programs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Bill. For this insight and 20 years of Te Waipunapua.
Yes.
And you're you're onto it, looking at Auckland, how it's changing, and what you have to add or take away or just change a little bit. Yeah. But it's always to be relevant and waiting for the calls at the same time. Mm. Like what Catherine McCauley said, that she, wherever she was asked to go, that's where she went.
Correct.
She didn't impose it to anybody.
That's right.
Yeah. And let's have a look what's coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center. You just mentioned Sister Bridget Crisp,
yes,
who is in charge of the garden behind Te Waipuna Puawai.
She is indeed.
Well, she's going to come to our Mercy Spirituality Center on the 10th of October, this coming Thursday. And she's going to, because we have the theme of gratitude this year, so she's going to talk about the importance of actioning gratitude. And she describes her workshop as, the session will explore the grace and gratitude given to us by the planet and our common response given in return. It will also include some strategies to help you explore giving gratitude and grace to creation while at the same time strengthening your own receiving of grace. And so if the weather is fine, we'll be outside in the garden a little bit, so take good shoes. But if somebody can't go in the garden, that's also not a problem.
Mm.
So it's, anybody is welcome. It's on Thursday, the 10th of October, from 7 to 9 p.m. So it's getting dark there, but it's still, as we have daylight saving over, so that will be fine. And then on Friday, the 18th, and Saturday, the 19th of October, we'll have Kay Ryan, who's going to come and facilitate a workshop with the topic Meaningful Encounters at the End of Life. And that's for people who are interested in how to cope with confrontations of with terminal illness or natural disasters. And it's for, the workshop is for anyone wanting to explore and reflect on the reality and mystery of death, our own and others. So we should just have to come with an openness and a compassion and the skill to contain the seeds of for life, of a fulfilling and a meaningful life. So that's Kay Ryan, who used to work in the mission team.
So
she's also well connected to the Mercy world. And then on the 13th of October, we'll have another person who's connected to the Mercy Sisters and to the mission team, the mission leader. Richard Kerbel is going to come on the 13th of October, 10:30 to 12:30. And his presentation is titled with Afi Mai, Afi Atu, Mercy Received, Mercy Given. That's
good.
A koha presentation, so anybody can come, but please register. And then just looking ahead, because we had the other week, we had Father Kevin Waldy in an interview. So his presentation on gratitude in the Bible, Gracious God of Israel and Jesus, Son of God, will be on the 21st of November, 7 to 9 p.m. That's a Thursday. So for all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And as usual, we finish with the tune of the Circle of Mercy, which is another Mercy tune. Thank you very much, Bill, for having come to the program.
My pleasure.
Have all a good Friday and a good week ahead.
Kia ora.
Which roots us in faith and live.